Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
He's been here.
High fly ball into right field. She is gone.
He's been there.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
He's been everywhere.
Shot from there and a save and a rebound. Yes! Score! Yes! Kings win the cup.
Sobel.
It's one small step for man.
Ted Sobel.
One giant leap for man.
The man, the myth, the legend.
What the hell's going on out here?
Now, one-on-one with Ted Sobel.
This is Ben Crenshaw of the PGA Tour. You'll never miss a 5'7" putt when you listen to Ted Sobel.
Welcome to our special PGA Championship Week podcast, Touching Greatness, here on the Believe Podcast Network, and I am with Brady Riggs, who is considered to be a top 100 coach. Folks, I have no idea what that means. Top 100 what? From who? Who votes for this? Who cares about it? I know it's important. It's sort of like Sir Brady Riggs, right? Brady, welcome to the cast.
Thank you. Happy to be here, Ted. Thanks for having me. Yeah, the top 100 list is a golf magazine, top 100 teachers in America. For some reason, they put me on that in 2007, and I haven't found my way off of it yet, 12 years later.
Must be doing something right.
I'm just bribing all the right people, as usual. So that's kind of cool. It's voted on basically by peers first and then goes through a process in a committee or whatever it is. I try not to pay attention to it because however I luck my way onto it, I don't want to have to analyze it at this point. So, yeah, but it's cool to be on it.
Okay, so how do you know when you're not on it? Do they send you a list and they say, thanks for being with us?
Yeah, every 2 years it's amended and adjusted. And then so you resubmit whatever paperwork, you know, things you've published or people you're working with, whatever that is. And then they vote on it again. And then if you don't make it at this point, I think I'm put onto an emeritus list,
oh,
right?
Okay.
Which is very nice. It's
that
a nice way of saying you're no longer on the list, but this way it's not such a hard blow.
Gotcha. And we remember you.
Indeed. And that's all that matters, really.
Is there an order, or is it just 100?
No, there is no order. We're all considered of equal value.
So 100 is as good as one, and you don't even know the difference.
And I don't know why there would be. you know, it's funny. Like, I think the only people that probably care about the list are those on it. You know, so nobody cares. It's not that big a deal in any other circle other than the small golf world that we
live. It's an accolade and a nice thing to go by.
It's cool to be on it. Yep. Golf Digest has a list. Theirs is top 50. And then that's by state also. So that one you can see where you're ranked. I remember one year I went from 39th in California to 16th, and I have no idea what I did to make it, you know, that much better. Now I'm 5th in California.
Really?
I am. I still don't know what I've done. I could very likely be 45th next year and not know what I did to get down the list. So, you know, those things are all cool, but they are what they are.
Okay, so we're here at Hanson Dam,
yes.
Your new house of worship. And it, you know what? It's a beautiful course. I haven't played here in at least a quarter of a century, but it's the first time I've done a podcast with birds in the background, which I appreciate.
You know, it's very strange here because when you're driving in on Glen Oaks Boulevard, you literally think you've somehow become part of the set of Mad Max, right? Because
yeah.
There's these campers
true.
And you don't know what is going on. And then you turn in and it's weird because it's kind of this beautiful little sanctuary right in the middle of Pacoima.
Yep.
Yes, it's possible. And it's cool because I'm a public course guy. You know, I grew up at Griffith Park, and I've never wanted to be at a private club. I always want to be able to teach who I want when I want, and this place gives me that opportunity, and I just feel much more at home if I don't have to dress up. So.
And this is my home away from home because you didn't know, and nobody I know knows. My first 3 or 4 years on this planet, I lived in Pacoima.
Wow, and you managed to still be here.
Well,
congratulations.
In those days, it was only dairies down the street. Seriously, it was dairies and orange groves.
Who
this
knew?
Is a long time ago.
Yeah, back
and
in,
Tyrannosaurus rexes.
Indeed, I was going to say, was it black and white then too?
Yes. Anyway, you were at Woodley for how many years now?
I was at Woodley for 22 years.
Wow.
Which was bizarre. I never thought I'd be there that long. Started in 96 there. Kind of moved over here pretty much full time about a year ago. And I love it here, and I don't have any plans on going anywhere else. So it's a good place for me.
It's a great setup. Anybody wants to come here, and Brady, you're like up to $5 an hour. Is that what you charge?
I think $4.99.
$4.99. That's good. That's good. A little under $500 an hour. If you want to come by here and check this place out, he owns the side of this place by himself.
Yes.
Not literally owns, because it is city land, right?
It is city land, and they've been very kind to give me my space down here, which is cool. The pro shop is opening up soon, which is great. We've got a guy named Bobby Cavanaugh who runs the joint. He really cares about golf, and you can kind of feel it in all the little things that you sort of miss at a public course. Like we were saying, they actually rake the bunkers every morning, which is nice. You know, people have a tendency not to rake the bunkers all that well when they play. So after like a long weekend at a public course, sometimes Mondays are a bit challenging.
Yeah, I bet.
But they're actually pretty good every day out here. So those little things make a difference.
Challenging. What about this course itself? What have they done here in the last, I don't know, let's just say 10 years to the course itself?
They grew the trees.
They grew them, really?
Yes.
In
yes.
10 years?
Yes, the trees. Wow. The trees are, this is a classic, you know, great parkland city course. Fairways are running adjacent, trees in between. You know, it's kind of what you'd expect coming to a city golf course. This one's kind of neat because there are some elevation changes on the front nine, which are cool. It's got plenty of length, which is nice for a public course. It's not super short. You can play tees all the way to from the blacks, which are significantly longer than most public golf courses. So it's fun. It's a neat challenge. The greens are enormous. So you'll feel good when you hit your, you know, 14 greens of regulation. You probably will three putt seven of them, but but it's fine. For a public golf course, it's great. It's exactly what you're hoping for.
And anybody who's ever played here before, I always have to bring up hole number 10.
Yes.
Because it's sort of like hitting from one community to another when you're standing at the top of the hill there.
It's a very weird hole.
Yes.
The tee is elevated and the green is higher than the tee. So if you think about that, you're hitting down to the fairway, and then your second shot, you're hitting straight up a hill. In fact, it's so uphill that the flag itself is twice the normal height just so you can see it from the fairway. So it's a pretty weird hole. But,
yes.
You know,
I wonder how you can compare it to 18 at Riviera, the uphill part.
Yes.
Would this would be a little more steeper, wouldn't it?
It's certainly steeper.
Yeah.
If I was in high school again, and we used to do this at DeBell late in the day. Actually, it was when it was dark. We'd get some ice blocks.
Okay.
From a car wash on Alameda Avenue. And we'd grab the ice blocks and we'd go to DeBell. And we'd go down a few of the fairways at DeBell sitting on the ice blocks.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Good, clean fun, yes. But 10 at Hanson Dam. If this is the Mount Kilimanjaro.
You could get hurt doing that.
You'd pick him some speed.
Right? That's too funny. All right, prominent students.
Yes.
Let's talk about some of your students that people would recognize anywhere in this country and some places in the world even.
Yeah, I've had a few over the years. I always feel like when you get fired from somebody, then you shouldn't claim them as yours anymore. So if I've worked with them in the past, then they're in the past for me. Currently, I've got Brandon Hagee on the PGA Tour, Kenny G, who I'm sure you've heard of. Those are two that kind of come to mind right off the bat. I'm working with some other celebrities' kids. I'd probably rather not say who they are at this point. But, you know, I've definitely had my May-December romances with people over the years in terms of good players and celebrities and athletes. And they all bring different things to the table. You know, I worked with Marcus Allen for a while.
Yep.
It was a lot of fun. I taught Johnny Bench and some other guys. I've got some great stories that aren't so PG with a couple of those guys.
By the way, I don't know if we ever told you this story, but Johnny Bench once caddied for me.
Shut up.
In the Pro-Am at the Kraft Nabisco before it was the A&A. He didn't caddy for me intentionally. I was playing with Sherry Steinhauer, who lives there in Rancho Mirage. I remember it like it was yesterday, and Johnny met us in the middle of the round, 6, 7, 8, whatever it was, and he stayed with us the rest of the day. He lives there too, and he's friends with Sherry, so he just hung with us, and all he wanted to do was shag my balls that went into the water, and he kept going in there looking for new ones, and I said, this is the greatest thing of all time. I got Johnny Bench as my caddy.
It's unbelievable. So if he could hold 7 baseballs in his hand, how many of your
400.
Golf balls?
400. By the way, he had one of the golf ball retrievers the long one, where you put it into the water, and he said, "You have no idea, Ted, how much fun I have finding these loose balls." I said, "You got to be kidding me." Hall of Famer Johnny Bench.
Hey, you know,
you learn something new every day, don't you?
You do. I'll give you a quick Johnny Bench story. So okay. we're in Palm Desert.
And by the way, wonderful guy. I love playing with him.
Really good dude. Really good dude. And a good golfer.
Yeah, really good.
So I was helping him out. I was giving him some lessons down in Palm Desert. Through a mutual friend of mine named Sandy, who's one of the all-time great storytellers. Anyway, okay. So we work all day at Mission Hills, and we decide to go to dinner. There's about seven of us, and now we're talking December in Palm Desert. It's kind of busy, right? So he said, "Let's go to P.F. Chang's." We head over to P.F. Chang's, and, I mean, there's people spilled out, you know, out of the waiting for a table. I'm like, there's no way we're going to get a table, you know? So Johnny says, "You guys stay here for a second." He walks in, and about a minute later, he comes out and he goes, "Let's go." So I have never felt more uncomfortable walking through a lobby of a restaurant, because all these poor people that were sitting there for hours, probably on end, we just strolled right in.
Cause he's Johnny Bench.
He's in the Hall of Fame for a reason. So anyway, we get in there and Sandy starts telling the story. Sandy's a golfer. And at the Olympic Club, Sandy set a record. Now, this story, of course, took about 20 minutes.
You can okay.
But Sandy's telling it, and he's regaling us of how at the Olympic Club, he had five cheeseburgers at the turn. Now, the cheeseburgers at the Olympic Club are special. They're actually on a hot dog bun, and they're cut lengthwise, and they're pretty spectacular, I have to say.
But five?
He had five.
Okay.
So he was telling us how incredible this was and how they gave him a plaque, and it was fabulous, and next time we're there, we should check it out. And Johnny's sitting there the whole way listening. And so in one of the all-time greatest amounts of smack I've ever heard, he gets done with a story. Bench looks at him, he goes, "That's a great story, Sandy. I got a plaque, too. It's at Cooperstown, you know, the Hall of Fame." And he goes, "They give you one of these." And it's this huge Hall of Fame ring.
That's beautiful.
It was pretty fantastic.
That's great. That sounds like Johnny.
Johnny Bench.
Yes. Yeah. Not a bad name. Can you describe your teaching style in words? How do you describe yourself compared to Ledbetter, or some of the famous names out there? What makes you different? I know what's different, but how do you describe it?
Well, it's evolved as time has moved on. You know, hopefully we're getting better all the time. You know, if you're a teacher, you want to learn from your own screw-ups, right? I think, one, I don't try to make anybody do anything like anybody else. I think that's really important. You know, we all come with our strengths and weaknesses, and you have to acknowledge those. So trying to make you swing like Tiger probably wouldn't be a good idea. No offense to Tiger, but you know, he can't get to your level. So there's that. And then I think generally, like, I really want to tap into whatever works for that person in terms of their background as an athlete or whatever that is. So for example, if I have somebody who needs to swing the club down on a more inside path.
Okay.
So I can talk to them about how their hips need to move more laterally, or they need to feel more weight in their left quadricep muscle. I mean, there's any litany of things you could go through to pick out a body part and try to change the pattern. But I would rather say, "Hey, did you play baseball? If you did, you know, can you start it over the second baseman's head?" And I might use my foot to draw a line on the ground instead. Or if they played tennis, if you're standing on the left side of the baseline, how would you hit a passing shot cross court?
Okay.
You know, those are all mechanics that help people sort of picture what they're trying to do. So my first way of trying to help somebody would be a big general idea that uses their background. And then if I had to get into specific stuff, I would. But I try to make it as simple as I can so that they can understand what they're trying to do. But I don't want to make it incomplete either. So that's what I'm trying to do all the time. I'm trying to make it functional.
I love what you did to me. Originally, you said, "You know, Ted, whatever your swing is like, be athletic. Swing like you want to hit the ball hard. It's okay, right?"
Totally. Yeah, nobody has ever thrown a strike 3-0 with the bases loaded
right. And
the winning run on third trying to throw a strike.
Right.
Right. You try to throw not to throw a ball there, and you're going to throw a ball. Golf's no different. You know, same thing like shooting a free throw. Try not to miss a free throw. You'll miss the free throw. Golf's the same way. You know, you're way better off if you let it go. You know, so I always say, if you're going to make a mistake, make a big mistake, because then at least it's free, you know, and you're more than likely to hit the fairway when you're trying to hit hard than you are when you're trying to hit it straight. So Rory even had a great quote a few months ago. He said, "When I have to hit a drive that I really have to hit the fairway on, I try to hit as hard as I can." But I think that's great advice for anybody. Obviously, you don't want to fall over, and there's certain things you want to do. But if you're steering it, this is the wrong game, man. It's not going to happen for you.
Okay. One of the things I remember that you taught me, I'm almost sure it was you.
Uh-oh.
Let
me hear what it is before I take over.
Hit through the ball. Don't hit the ball. Does that sound like something you would have said?
Yeah. I think just like people, they tend to break up the swing. You know, they have the takeaway.
Right.
And then they got the backswing. They get the top. And then they got the start down. And they got impact. And it's and then the release. It's like...
By the way, you play 18 holes already by the time you finish that first swing.
No doubt. And think about your poor brain that's going through the gymnastics, right? You're trying to stand over it. So if you kind of take all that away and you make it more like a swing, you know, the swing happens to go back and go forward and it goes up and it goes down. But it's still like a motion you're making. And to kind of chop it up is it's not going to have it work. You know, nobody's ever played worth a damn thinking about their backswing. You know, so that's a thing you maybe work on the range. But on the golf course, man, you can't have that stuff. You're talking about, I always want a positive through to the finish thought, which is kind of what we're talking about, right? So I want it something to be like, get to my finish and balance, or throw the club head down to the target. Something that's positive through the ball so that I can be aggressive rather than worrying about a piece of it.
Okay, so I want you to say, Ted, I love what you came up with for your own swing, or I think it's really stupid.
Okay,
because tempo is so important, right, in the swing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I came up with, for me, one, going back, two, I'm not sure what the two is, but it's like there's a 1-2-3 tempo, right? So it's 1-2 through.
Ooh, 1-2
and through the ball. Is that a good swing thought in your mind?
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Okay. Would you tell that to anybody, or you would keep it to yourself?
Well, I'll give you one that I've used.
I'm trying to get credit for something here that could become of value down the road.
We'll see. Published. We'll see.
Oh, wow.
So I had a student who was struggling with her chipping technique, pitching technique.
And by the way, if you hear that in the background, that's Brady's private plane. They'll be landing soon.
So I was trying to explain the chipping technique to them, and I said, you could say it's like Tiger Woods, you know, going through.
Oh, okay, right.
You know, and so she told me, she goes, I much prefer Brady Riggs.
Okay.
And I said, that works for
that
me
works.
Too.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, something like that, some little mantra that you're saying as you go, that's the stuff that great players do. They're always having some little running check, dialogue, cue, something to help them stay on task with what they're doing and not get caught up worrying about what might happen.
But they would only do that on the range. They wouldn't do that while they're playing, right?
There's no way that great players don't have swing thoughts.
No, but I mean, they wouldn't be thinking 1-2, would they?
You'd be shocked.
Really?
Yes, you'd be surprised.
Like, I could see DJ trying to hit the ball in half, and he's going, 1-2, I can't picture it.
There's those types of things happen all the time. Great players are thinking. They really are. It may be something incredibly simple, but nobody ever plays well not thinking about anything.
Okay.
So, in fact, we know that you're much better off if you're picturing the target as you're swinging.
Right.
Or picturing the shot shape, where it's going to start, how much it's going to curve, that kind of stuff.
But that's a lot easier to think about than your actual swing, right?
It can be, but...
Because otherwise you're going to mess up your head too much. Too much in there is not a good thing.
True. But I would say that the body doesn't react to words. It reacts to sensations, to feels. So telling yourself a lot of things during the swing, that doesn't really work. But trying to connect yourself to different feels you're having as you're swinging is the way to go, you know? So it may be like, if I want to hit a fade, I feel like I'm making the club work left through the ball. That way the path gets left of the face and the ball curves to the right. So for that feeling, it may be that you need to feel like you're hitting it over the third baseman's head. That might be a good thought for you.
Okay.
You know, so there's all those things that we have in our heads as we're going. There's nothing wrong with that stuff. You just want to limit it if you can, and you want to make sure it's always a positive. You know, thinking don't, the brain doesn't differentiate don't from do.
Right.
All they hear is, like, if you say don't come over the top, you know, that doesn't work. You're coming over the top. That's what it heard. So you need to instead say, I need to come more from the inside, or picture the inside route, or see a line on the ground, whatever those things are. Right. But it has to be an affirmative.
Okay.
It really does.
Is this the long way of telling me I'm never going to see on BradyRiggs.com on the main page 1-2 through?
I'm going to do a little investigation on that one, Ted. Let me see if it'll work. If it does, I'll give you full credit.
But doesn't it have sort of a good ring to it? And also reminding you, hit through the ball, that you want to look on the other side of the ball, not the front of the ball. I think you taught me that 100 years ago.
You're checking a lot of boxes there, Ted. You are.
Yeah, but it's
short. It's simple. I know. It's on the target side of the ball, which is great. Those are all the things that we want. We want it to be that.
Okay, good. I'm just thinking, could this be the next title of your book?
It could be. So I'll give you
1-2, I'm through with Ted Sobel, I think is going to be the name of it.
Not at all, Ted. We love it. So I'll give you a Warren Spahn story.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
By the way, tell anybody under the age of 50 who Warren Spahn is.
I know. But, you know, who listens to your podcast anyway, right? So what are we
That's
worried
true.
About?
Okay. Most of those people, their hearing is gone, exactly. So it doesn't even matter.
They don't even know if it's on. So Warren Spahn was pitching the World Series. I probably get the story a little bit wrong, but the point of it is the same. So anyway, he's pitching a gem.
57, probably.
Okay. Pitching coach comes out before he faces the batter and says, whatever you do, don't throw this guy a low inside fastball and knock it out of the park. So he's walking away and Spahn says, why would anybody say that to somebody that way? You know, why would you say, don't throw a low inside fastball,
right.
Low inside fastball, low inside fastball. Throws Boom. A low inside fastball, goes over the left field wall. You know, so it shows you, like, you'll go to the thought, you know. So if you're standing, let's say you play a hole and you hate a hole. There's OB right on the fourth hole or whatever it is, and you always hit it OB there. Well, if you're standing on that tee and you're saying, whatever I do, you're going to hit OB right. A very simple way to help yourself with golf is try to hit the ball left. You know, think, I'm going to hit it down.
There's a new concept.
I know it seems weird and overly simplistic, but it really does kind of come down to stuff like that, where it's like the thing that you're telling yourself you'll work towards, you give yourself a negative, you're going to go there every time.
Okay, so I need to tell everybody who Warren Spahn was. Yep. He's another Hall of Famer, baseball,
Indeed.
Right?
Indeed.
Great Milwaukee Brave.
Yes, Milwaukee Braves.
Actually was on the team the first time I saw the Braves play the Dodgers at the Coliseum in 1959.
Old.
Damn, am I old, huh?
You are old.
It's unbelievable.
I wasn't even close to being born yet.
No, you, not even a thought.
No, I was born in 68, so you think.
Wow.
We're talking a full almost decade.
Okay, well, I'm going to be depressed here. As I age rapidly, let's talk about the PGA Championship. By the way, we are talking to and with Brady Riggs, top 100 teacher. Remember that.
Indeed.
101 is not good enough. It never does the job. Yep. Okay, let's talk about the Tiger comeback.
Yes.
Okay, I was really fortunate to be there. Unbelievable. It really was amazing. I was standing off the 18th green when he won, but there were so many people I couldn't see him.
Oh,
so
wow.
All I wanted to do was take it in. That's all I did. I just wanted to listen. And it was a famous Tiger roar like you cannot believe when you're there live.
Yes.
And an incredible place to be at. I also was there when he won it in 08 at Torrey Pines.
Okay.
And with a gentleman by the name of Eddie Marins, who at that time was teaching Rocco Mediate, which I did not know until I bumped into him on Monday morning of that playoff.
Wow, that's very cool.
It'll be in my book.
Yeah, Eddie Marins, you know.
Yes, you have a little close tie-in with him, don't you?
For absolutely no reason. Eddie was voted into SCPGA Teaching Hall of Fame, which was long overdue. They just sort of started the Hall of Fame, so Eddie would be on the first class of that. Somehow I got in at the same time as Eddie onto that, and I still don't. First of all, sure, I don't deserve it, and secondly, I know I'm not old enough to be in a Hall of Fame yet, so I don't.
Did Eddie have a problem with that at all? Like, what the hell are you doing here?
No, he kind of looked sideways at me like, who is this clown?
Do you know Eddie?
I do.
I mean, did you know him well before that?
I've known of Eddie for a long, long time.
Yeah, but know him personally.
Yes.
Like, deal with him.
On a couple occasions.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
so he knew you.
Yeah, really good guy.
Yep.
Really good guy.
He's been top, like, 10 and not top 100 forever.
Eddie wrote the book. Yeah, he started the list.
Yeah. Swing the handle.
Swing the handle.
That's what it's about.
Yeah, I've known a lot of people that played at UCLA when he was the coach there and worked with him over the years. And, you know, the great thing about swing the handle is you can kind of make that whatever you want it to be.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, it can be whatever that is for you. It's kind of a great thing to have, right?
Cause sort of like 1-2 through.
Indeed. You might,
it's almost
might just
exactly
make
the same. Make I'm going to call Eddie right now.
1-2 through may be even a little more specific than swing the handle.
Wow. Now you give me an idea to write another book.
There's another book.
Exactly.
As long as I get credit.
Can I finish the damn first one first?
It's taking you a while.
Yeah, yeah, please. A year and a half, but who's counting? Speaking of Tiger, you know, Eddie did teach him a little bit. He's had a few moments with him here and there. That's what he told me throughout the years.
Mm-hmm.
What about the comeback? I mean, we talked about this previous,
yes.
How amazing it is for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, it's an amazing accomplishment. Is it more amazing in golf terms than Ben Hogan almost dying on a road?
No, not even close.
No, I don't think so. Is the 2019 Masters a more spectacular sporting event than the 1986 Masters? Hell no. from my perspective.
Although some people who covered both said they would, it's right there. It's 1A, 1B.
Okay, I don't disagree with that.
Okay.
However, Tiger shot 70 in the final round this year. Jack didn't shoot 70 in the final round. You know, that was a different round completely.
Got it.
You know, I think in a lot of ways, we see the brilliance of Tiger along in terms of his intelligence. There was no smarter golfer than Tiger Woods, except for maybe Jack, and I don't know, maybe he's past Jack at this point in terms of just your ability to get around a golf course and be smart, not beat yourself. There's a reason he won all those majors without ever having gotten caught from behind, because he's just that smart. He was not going to do something stupid on 12,
right,
like everyone else did, right? All those other guys didn't know their history.
Although he also said that could be that swirling wind around there, that it affected them. He said Tony Finau hit a perfect shot and the wind caught it and boom, it's in the creek.
Yes, I'm sure that can happen.
But
by the same token, Jack never hit it in the water there, and Tiger doesn't either.
Right.
You know, they hit a club.
I did, by the way, twice.
Here's the that hole is phenomenal, right? I mean, it's as a left-handed golfer, it's a much easier hole.
Oh, I never thought about that.
Here's why. The green runs diagonally away from a right-handed player to the right.
Okay.
So let's say you have enough club to clearly carry the right edge of the front bunker.
Okay.
Not get all the way back to the right hole location, but to get over that right edge of the bunker. Well, as a right-handed player, when you pull a short club, it goes further. This is a problem because the azaleas are right there if you fly over the green, not to mention the back bunker. So if you pull it as a righty, you're in the azaleas. If you flare it a little bit right, it goes shorter than your normal distance as a right-handed player. You're in the water.
Does this also depend on pin placement?
It doesn't. It's just the facts of a right-handed player hitting a short iron.
Got it.
Pulls go further, pushes go shorter. Well, the way the hole's designed, you're screwed either way, but you're especially screwed if you push it. Now, if you're a lefty playing that hole and you pick the same target right over the right edge of the bunker and that's your yardage, well, if you pull that, it goes further. You hit it right, but it went further. You might stiff it to a back hole location, not even meaning to. If you push it or flare it a little bit and it goes left, that's shorter. That still has a really good chance of getting on the green. So the way the hole is designed, it's sort of built for a lefty to be more successful than a righty.
Okay.
And if you don't know your history and you don't know where to aim there and you haven't studied, then you could make a mistake there and hit it in the water. And the reason why DJ is not the PGA champion or the Masters champion and Koepka hadn't won his fourth out of six majors, whatever the heck it was because he hit in the water. They were tied second by
a
shot.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah, but that thing was totally wide open down the stretch. It could have been six guys.
I totally agree with that. But that's two shots for both guys who both finished second by a shot.
Absolutely.
Either one could have a green jacket right now if they weren't stupid or make a mistake of that manner. Obviously, I'm not calling them stupid. They're fine.
No, I know.
I'm just saying, like, the way the hole's designed, you can't miss right. You just can't miss right. So you got to take a club that you can pull and be fine and deal with it. And Nicklaus won six times doing that. Tiger knows his history. He did the right thing. He made his par. He won the green jacket.
Can we talk about the time I played number 12?
What happened on 12?
Do you remember that story? I'm sure I told you.
Maybe I tried to block it out, but go
yes,
ahead.
Yes, it's not a 1-2 through story. This was totally 1-2. I like that. 1-2 is 12. Anyway, in a different way. Here's what happened. Do you remember what Jordan Spieth did to screw up his entire green jacket? Okay, what did he do?
He hit it right, and then he took a drop in a place he probably shouldn't have.
Right.
And made his life more miserable and tried to hit it in the water. He hit it in the water another time and basically washed away his Masters.
Exactly.
Yes.
So what I did was almost the same thing. I hit the tee shot, same place. I think it was about 151 yards maybe. Okay. 7-iron for me. Hit it a little thin, but I thought it was okay just to get up above the bank. And it hit like about a foot short of the green on the bank and rolled into the creek. All right. So my caddy says to me, "You want to go to the drop area?" And I said, "Hell no, I'm never playing here again. I want to go for it. I don't really care." Mm-hmm. You know, my score was, I ended up 103, I think I shot, right?
Fair enough.
Okay, so I said, "No, I don't. I want to hit one more." And we were dodging rain.
Uh-oh.
Okay, it was coming, like heavy thunderstorms. Mm-hmm. We had to finish. I said, "Let me just get one more shot in." And then I hit this one worse.
Uh-oh.
I pushed it to the right.
And it went shorter.
And it went a little shorter and splash right into Ray's Creek, right? So we go to the drop area. And what did Jordan do?
He dropped it on a lie.
Was it a chunk or?
It was a chunk.
Yeah.
It was on a lie that was very easy to chunk it from.
Okay, I got
slight hill down, slight downslope, kind of wet.
Right.
Because it had been raining as well. And a really, really tough shot. He would have been actually way better off hitting again from the...
Wow.
From
I
the,
never thought about it that
he
way.
He would have been better off hitting either again from the tee.
Like I did, and I put it in the water again.
Because you know what that club is. You can put your hand on the ball so you can put a tee underneath it. You're better off doing the known than to go on a slope that's that tough. I mean, it was a much harder shot.
Yeah, and he looked totally embarrassed when it happened.
You're shell-shocked.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a little... I don't mean to cheapen it. It was a little fog of golf war, if you will, right? You're just like, it's all happened so fast, and you had this lead, and you're going to obviously cruise to your second green jacket, and now in 5 minutes, it's all changed, and you're just not thinking right anymore. It's all sped up, and you're gone, you know, and
he actually, happens. After that, he did okay, didn't he?
He was okay. But, like, in that moment, the madness that was going on in that hole.
It's just crazy. It's one of the strangest holes in the history of the game, isn't it?
You know, like, Augusta does that to people.
Yes, it does.
I mean, the old saying, term starts the back nine on Sunday.
They're not kidding.
They're not kidding. You know, I mean, you go through that golf course and talk about 10 or 11 or any of those holes, except for maybe 14, almost every hole on that back nine, you can think of somebody offing themselves, right? It's spectacular. You know, I mean, that's why we love it so much. Yep. I mean, 13... You know, you've got Curtis Strange, you've got, you know, 15, obviously Seve and what happened to him and this year to Molinari.
Yep.
And the list goes on the back nine. So, yeah, you need to really know your history on that side. And you got to make sure you're in the right places and don't make the big mistakes because there are ways to make up shots. You can't make double on 12. You just can't do that. You can make bogey like Jack did in 6 and win the golf tournament.
Exactly.
You just can't make double.
Okay, so finish my story on number 12. So I'm in the drop area. And then I literally made the worst shot in the world, and I didn't tell anybody that I knew you, that you even helped me with my swing.
Please,
I could have ruined your career immediately. My caddy says, where the hell did that come from? I mean, I chunked it right into the water like I did it on purpose.
Oh,
it was so bad. And I wasn't nervous. I was just having fun. It was just the worst shot I've ever hit in my life. So what am I lying now? I got two misses on the tee.
Well, you got three in the water, basically.
Yep.
So you're one in the water,
two out.
One in the water, two out, three in the water, four out, five in the water, six out. So you're hitting your seventh
I'm hitting my seventh shot, so I hit it.
Now you're thinking, can I stay in single digits on this hole?
I'm thinking, can I hole out from...
Okay.
That's what I'm thinking. Remember, this is, by the way, this is a Sunday pin placement.
Well,
so you know where that is, right?
Based on the very recent history you've had hitting three straight shots in the water, I can see how you'd be exuding confidence
Boy, is that a coach for you. Anyway, so I'm hitting seven, right?
Did you hole it out?
No, I did not hole it out. No, I didn't hole it out, but I hit a good shot that almost hit the flag on the way down and just trickled off the green. Now this is a Sunday pin placement, so it's down by the right, on the right side near the right bunker.
In the fringe, back fringe.
No, I'm not in the fringe. I'm in the bunker.
Ooh,
okay.
So now,
before we go anywhere, I want you to tell me, you know that pin placement, right?
Yes.
Okay, so how difficult is that pin placement for that bunker?
Well, it's difficult for a professional.
Why?
Well, it depends on where you are in the bunker. If you've just barely trickled into the bunker and you're slightly on the upslope, you got a shot at it.
Yeah, I was sort of at the bottom of the upslope.
If you're on the bottom of the bunker, it's more challenging, and God forbid you've gotten towards the back.
No, I wasn't at the back.
Then
I was near the front.
Then you're cooked.
I was near the front.
So if you're in the front, you got a shot at it.
Right.
Obviously, it's got to come out incredibly soft.
Yep.
You have to, you know, choose a line that's either well left of the flag, so that if you're missing, you're missing into the fringe that's sort of on the back of the green, or right with the possibility of maybe hitting a little too far and going into the front bunker. But at least you take the possibility of hitting it into the water.
Now, how strong is that possibility with a master's speed of the greens?
With master's speed.
Now, this is the next day. This is a Monday after the match, and they didn't touch it. So, as my caddy said, it's still very fast, but it's not Championship Sunday fast.
I mean, it's really hard. It's basically, it's the old line. You're hitting a ball from the roof of your car, and you're trying to stop it on your front windshield. That's the shot.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
It's very, very hard.
Yes,
it's
is.
Not
okay. So I'm lying seven hitting eight, right. Yes. Okay, so.
So now the basically have so the sun set yet? You've been on this hole for a while.
No, I just want to finish this because it's a great story.
No, I mean you've actually been on that hole for quite some time.
Oh, yeah. Forget sunset. We're worried about this rain coming.
And you're running out of golf balls at this point.
And my caddy says to me exactly that. Ted, you're not losing any more balls. He went down to be a human wall.
Nice. So he's playing basically catcher.
Yes.
Or a goalie.
He did better than Johnny Bench for me that time. He didn't have his glove with him.
Uh-oh.
But he was standing.
He did need to. Did he have to make a save?
Oh, hold on.
Uh-oh.
So he went straight, like on the other side where the pin was, straight down the way to protect, right?
Yes.
And the other caddy says, I'm going to protect the right side over here, like another 20 feet over or something like that. So they're,
all
hands we had a foursome.
On deck at this point. Yeah.
And they're all there. So I looked up, and I'll never forget. I could see the hole from where I was. It wasn't because it's not a deep bunker,
it's not deep,
right? So I could see the hole, and I just dug in. And that sand, by the way, is incredibly soft.
Oh, it's
like the softest I've ever felt ever.
Right, but it's not beach sand soft.
No.
It's perfect playable.
It's totally perfect, and I call it. It felt like hitting cotton candy. That's my way of saying it. So I hit the ball. The most perfect trajectory in the world, really high up, and it landed just off the fringe, and it started to roll, and it rolled straight into the damn cup.
No way.
Yes way. My caddy said that's the greatest eight, and he said he's been working there for 25 years, the greatest eight he's ever seen there in his life.
That's fabulous.
No way. I love that reaction from my top 100 pro.
Sorry, I didn't mean for the shock to spill out. So basically what you're saying is you played the 12th hole at Augusta, and in that hole you had a combination of Jordan Spieth, right?
Yes.
Tin Cup.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And Bob Tway.
What did Bob Tway do at 12?
He holed out. Well, he didn't do it at 12, but he holed out at the 86 PGA to beat Greg
I'm
Norman.
I'm thinking at Augusta. Yeah.
No, so you were tapping into different generations. It's fabulous. What a great story.
Isn't that the great eight?
Yeah, so you would much better hitting it on the green three putting. You'd never remember
I have an unbelievable story to tell forever, right?
Indeed.
I asked Ben Crenshaw about it. I asked Gary Player and a couple other ex-Masters or former.
Anybody could hit that shot, it would be Gary Player for sure.
Yes, and they all just said, wow, that's pretty impressive.
That's
and
pretty
I said,
impressive.
Yeah, not the eight isn't. I didn't tell him the eight until the end, by the way. That was for eight?
They get time. I hold out of the back bunker.
Exactly.
On 12, yeah.
Exactly. On the Sunday pin placement. Exactly. By the way, then I birdied 13.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow, you were on fire.
Yep, and then it was all downhill literally from there.
Think
it was
awful. How
many
guys would have traded in their score on 13 for years, over the years, right?
Made a huge difference.
It could have been a Masters.
You are in the same spot, although we didn't do it at Hanson Dam, that Ben Crenshaw was in because I talked to him at the Masters for one of my podcasts, and I said to him, you and I had the exact same putt on 13. Yours was for a green jacket because that catapulted him into the top of the leaderboard the second time he won it.
95, yeah.
Yep. And that was his birdie putt. I think it was a birdie or eagle.
I can't remember now. I think it was a birdie. I'm not sure, though.
I think it was a birdie.
For me, the 84 win for him is the one that sticks the most. I was 16 years old.
Okay.
I mean, golf was, you know, like.
The other one sticks with me because he was older. Nobody thought he had a chance, and he was crying afterwards. And remember, his teacher just died and the
Harvey
whole thing.
Harvey Pennick just died. Yep. He was a pallbearer at his funeral that week
with
Tom Kite. I mean, it's a great story.
It's incredible.
One of those things that sort of makes us love sport even more,
exactly.
You know, that somebody could do that. But, I mean, 84 was the putt on 10. I'll never forget that putt on 10. He made a birdie on 10 from the front of the green. The pin was in the back left hole location. He had 60 feet. It was probably one of the all-time greatest putts ever made.
And from one of the all-time greatest putters.
Indeed. And that's one of the things, I think. You know, we all can make a 60-footer, right?
Right.
I mean, blind squirrel, right?
Right.
But at some point, like, that isn't luck. When somebody who putts that well on a green that's that hard and that fast with everything on the line does that, that now becomes one of the greatest putts in history. It isn't just that it was a 60-footer.
Of course.
It was who did it, where they did it, and what it meant.
Anyway, my birdie putt on 13 was almost, it had to be within 2 inches of where he made his in 95. It was this big curling putt, which I didn't read it correctly. Thank God my caddy did. Mm. And he said, you put it right here. And I did. And it just curled right in there. And I said, you know what? I love this game. And then it was back to double bogeys all over the place.
Game and corner was good to you, sort of.
Sort of, exactly. Yeah, sort of. We were not talking about 10, by the way.
You had moments.
Yes, I had. Okay, so Tiger's comeback was unbelievable.
Yes.
Does he have any edge this week because he won an 0-2 at Bethpage? Because it's a little different, and he's a lot different.
Yeah, he's a completely different. I mean, probably. I mean, he tends to have ways of playing the same course real well. We've seen that with Torrey, and definitely seen that with Pebble over the years, and we've seen that.
But it's
at
a
Bay
different
Hill.
Tiger now. I'm thinking, you know, his swing is different.
But he knows the golf course.
Okay.
You know, and nobody's
confidence
gonna,
is confidence too, right?
Nobody's going to dissect a course better than Tiger. Yep. There's no question about that.
Should he be the favorite?
Wow.
Because he's co-favorite.
I don't know. That's a weird. I think, I mean, he's certainly in the top five guys you'd think would have a very good shot this week. He hasn't played since the Masters. It's a little weird.
Yeah.
You know, take that much time off. I don't know. This golf course is going to penalize people that are missing fairways.
That's for sure.
So
he better be on.
I think this is going to be a test that we may see some pretty big guys, pretty big name players miss this cut.
Really?
It's the strongest field. It's the first time in history they've had the top 100 in the world playing in a major at the same time.
Not counting Justin Thomas, who had to withdraw.
Well, you don't have to ruin it. That's where it was, though. I mean, he was going to play.
No, but you're right.
99 out of 100 is pretty good.
No, it's great.
I mean, obviously you have your 20 of my brethren, PGA members, that are not going to challenge for this tournament in any way. And if one or two make the cut, it'll be a miracle. So that makes the field a little weaker and more diluted. But you still have 130... you know, some odd players that are phenomenal players that are, it should be a really good week. This golf course is, it's no joke in terms of accuracy. It's finally a major where you kind of need to hit the fairway, which is kind of nice.
Shouldn't that be everyone?
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous. I mean, the golf courses have become, like, there were days back in the day, I mean, yeah, the U.S. Open for years, Mike Reed had a chance to win every year, you know, and Andy North won too, and you know, Scott Simpson, who wasn't really a long hitter, was always a perennial favorite. Hey, Payne Stewart probably would not have had the career he had if he was a present-day player. He wasn't that long.
Right.
You know, I mean, guys were straighter. Curtis Strange won twice, for God's sakes, back-to-back, right? So, I mean, you had to have accuracy to win this tournament, win the U.S. Open. Now, all the majors are just, it's just a wide-open.
It's a bomb fest.
It really is. I mean, in some ways, the Open Championship is the one. Yeah. Every year, you just never know, you know, what the
plus the weather could always be.
You just don't know. Yeah. It could be a total, you know, it's what makes it so fun, because you just never know. I just think, like, the fact that these fairways are so tight is going to make the golf tournament much more fun to watch in a way. We're going to see some guys, maybe like a Kevin Kisner, or somebody who hits the ball really straight and is really accurate, keeps the ball in play. Those guys may have a chance this week in a major for the first time in a long time. So that's going to help. I think it's a better tournament when that's the case. I mean, it shouldn't be that you have equal power and accuracy probably play an equal role, but accuracy has to play some role.
It should.
And it just hasn't for a while. So, like, this, the fact that this week's going to be tough, it's going to be wet. That means that the fairway, the rough's going to not get mowed, and it's going to be long and nasty and wet.
And brutal.
It's going to be unfun to be in. That's going to help, I think, separate some of these guys that are longer and also looser. And we may see some, maybe a guy is smarter and he's taken 2 iron off some tees or 3 wood and hit some more fairways. We'll see. Tiger's no dummy. He's going to play intelligently. He's going to do what he has to do to try and compete, stay in the tournament from that standpoint. You know, he's probably more capable of gearing back based on the demands of the golf course than any other top player in the world. So from that standpoint, that's an edge. I think Koepka is to be dealt with.
Yep.
Koepka made his first putt over 20 feet, I think it was. It was either 20 or 25 feet. The first time he made a putt that long last week.
Really? All year?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So as good as he's played.
Well, does that mean he's not putting well, or well, that means, I mean, he's always so close to the pin?
You could look at it a few
ways,
exactly. Right? You could say, well, he's stuffing it a lot.
Yeah.
Probably not the case. I mean, PGA Tour averages say from 20 feet you're going to make 15% of the putts. You're not making a lot of those as it is, but you'd like to make a few.
Right.
You know, he happened to make 3 last week. So, I mean, they sort of happen that way. You know, what happens if he made 2 20-foot plus putts at Augusta? He'd have a green jacket right now. You know, so that's kind of where these guys are. You know, the guy that gets a couple more breaks or makes a couple more putts, or that's the guy that's going to win. So picking a winner is really tough. You can kind of guess who's going to be in the mix in some events. But I think this week, all bets are off, man. Accuracy matters this week.
Okay, but how about the happy medium between accuracy and the guys that can almost bomb it so far past everybody that they still have an edge if it's not too bad of a rough situation, you know what I mean?
Sure.
I mean, are there guys that should be hitting three woods and not have their drivers out this week?
We'll see. I mean, if you're the good thing about being long is that if you do hit it in the rough, you have a shorter club. You know, so it's an advantage even if you do miss the fairway versus another guy who's missed the fairway.
Right.
But we know that based on the data that if you're hitting from the fairway and you're hitting from the rough and you're on the same yardage, the guys from the rough tend to be 50% further from the hole, regardless of the yardage that they're hitting from. So that does mean that it matters to hit some fairways for sure. You got to hit them.
How about dark horses? Give me a couple of names.
Wow. Dark horses.
I have a couple. How about Patrick Cantlay?
He had a great Masters.
L.A. guy.
Great Masters.
Yep.
Really good Masters. I mean, he's always quietly in the mix now.
Yep.
You know, he seems to be a guy who's poised to kind of...
A long shot, too, that most people won't think, hey, just another guy.
Totally.
But he is now, I think, has that confidence. Like, I can play with these guys in the majors.
I think, it'll be interesting because New York offers its own challenge, right? I mean, who are they going to get on this week, Ted? Who's it going to be?
It's true.
Patrick Reed, he's probably going to get some abuse this week.
Well, he's an easy one to
get some abuse. Is John Rahm going to be a target maybe? I don't know. I mean, there's certain guys that based on their attitude and kind of the way they walk around, that's a whole other animal to deal
with.
That's true. You know, I don't know. This is going to be a strange major in that way because you have a golf course that's a little different than the majors we've seen. You've got New York going. You may have some weather issues that are challenging.
Although it's not supposed to be too bad. They say it's going to get a little warmer into the 60s throughout the week. Not a lot of rain. Most of the rain's supposed to be today is the last day of the bad rain.
Good.
So it'll probably be a little bit soggy, but not too bad.
Yeah, and I think I really think the PGA of America, as they do a very good job of running a championship. I really believe that.
Better than the USGA?
No doubt in my mind.
Really?
Yes.
I sort of like the idea that they try and make it complex, but maybe too much. Is that what you're thinking?
Or? Yeah, I just feel like how do I say this the right way? Ah, screw it. I won't say it the right way. PGA is run by professionals.
That's true.
And this is what they do.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, they're professionals in the game. So they understand that part of the game. I'm not, of course, saying that the USGA... It just seems like if you look at the number of mistakes that have been made in U.S. Opens and USGA events, I'm sorry, it's way disproportionate based on the number of events they run.
Right.
So somewhere in there, something's going quite wrong, and they're not doing the job they should be doing. We shouldn't be seeing all these crazy things go on, you know, from Mickelson hitting the ball, all that crap that we've seen.
Yep.
Something's up with the setup. So I think the PGA runs a very, very good event. I think the golf courses are never unfair. They're never stupid, and they're never hokey. They tend to be really good tracks, and they're taken care of properly, and they tend to be fair. So from that standpoint, I think they do an excellent job. So that part is good. I don't know. Dark horses are weird. I just feel like we're at a point now where, you know, maybe an older guy who... You know, is this Kuchar's week? I know that he's not a dark horse.
Like a Zach Johnson when he won the Masters.
Because you've got a golf course that's asking for that, right? I mean, Kuchar's he's not short by any means, but he's not the longest guy in the field. He hits it pretty darn straight. He hits a fade all day long and twice on Sunday, and that's what he's going to hit. So he's going to hit the fairway a lot. Guys like that tend to keep the ball in play, they're going to have a major advantage this week. So I think you're going to see somebody hit fairways and greens. We may see some like actual golf from our past where you actually had to hit the
fairway.
Wow,
there's a shock.
I know, it's weird, but I think you kind of need to hit the fairway this week.
Do you like John Rahm's game as much as I do? If he could just figure out how to deal with his own emotions and try not to kill himself every 5 minutes?
He's a really good player.
Yes,
I mean,
really good.
Find a weakness.
I mean, I think he's got number one written all over him, but he can never figure it out in his head.
He doesn't really have a lot of weaknesses in his game.
Right.
The weaknesses have obviously been in the way that he talks to himself. So if at some point he figures out that he needs to be his own best friend on the golf course, then he's going to be probably winning a lot of majors.
So in other words, negativity throughout is killing him?
I just think, like, if you hear this story all the time from golf, from the world of golf, whether right. it's on the guy's side or the women's side. The women's side, we've heard it with Jutana Garn 2 years ago when she became number one in the world, and we hear this across the board, which is the second I started to try to be good to myself on the golf course, I started getting better results.
Huh.
You know, lo and behold, it may be important. You know, I talk to my daughter who plays college golf about this all the time. Like, self-talk, it really, really matters. And I tell
them. Like an example, though, like self-talk.
I hit a bad shot. You're an idiot. You know, I can't believe you did that. What a dumbass. You know, all the things that
right.
you would say
right.
to yourself.
By the way, did I ever tell you about I had somebody make up, I think it was 500 or 1,000 tees, because I used to say all the time, this is 30 years ago at least, when I would hit a bad tee shot, I would say, you are just the wimp of the decade.
Yeah.
I would call myself the wimp of the decade. I don't know why. I haven't thought of this in 25 years, but it came back to me. Mm. And I used to, and so they bought me for my birthday like 1,000 tees that says wimp of the decade on it.
Then you finally stopped saying it after you broke them all, or?
Is that like not the smartest thing in the world,
I
mean, to see that tee every time you tee it up?
It's horrible. It's
is that like the dumbest thing in the history?
It's reaffirming everything you shouldn't be doing.
Is that, my next book will be 1-2, You're an Idiot.
Yeah, or 1-2, Wimp of the Decade. I mean, you just, that's part of the game. You know, part of the game is, I tell my players all the time, do you have a younger sibling, you know? Would you ever talk to them like that if they missed a shot?
Okay. That makes
you know,
sense.
And if you, of course you wouldn't, you know, you'd say, don't worry about it. It's okay. You'll get to the next one. You know, it's a learning experience, whatever the things are, but we don't offer ourselves that forgiveness. You know, we're so hard on ourselves all the time. So I don't know, somebody like Rom, who's got all this upside, he's obviously, there's no reason he shouldn't be winning major championships during his career, but you know, to do that, you got to be good to yourself. You really have, there's nothing wrong getting frustrated. That's one thing, you know, that's okay. Get it out. It's a completely different thing to say bad things to yourself about yourself when you're playing. You just can't do that. You know, can't do it as a pitcher in baseball. You just, those things don't work. You're better off having swagger. You're better off blaming, you know, the mud on the ball or,
right.
you know, your teacher.
Anything but yourself.
Exactly.
Teacher, Brady Riggs. Yeah. Let me ask you this then. The two words that I think the best prescription for that, have fun.
Hmm.
Does that make any sense at all? Now, I know it's easier to say when you're not hitting the ball well and you're saying there's nothing fun about golf when it's a four-letter word, baby, any way you look at it, when you're not hitting it right.
I mean, an amateur, 100%. There's no reason. Amateur.
Even a pro.
Pros are tougher, man. I mean, this is their career, so livelihood.
Okay,
is,
but put all that aside.
I get that. But
is there a way to say, because I've said this to guys, Kyle Stanley, remember mm-hmm. when he had the big
sure.
meltdown
yeah.
at Torrey yeah. Pines? He's in my book because I covered him, and he cried after I asked him the first question, mm-hmm. and that was one of the most difficult days of my life dealing with this. But I said to him since, at the Masters, mm-hmm. I saw him recently, and I said, isn't there a way that you could just have fun when things aren't going well? And he goes, it's a good swing thought.
Hmm. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, good swing thought, have fun. Mine always is just hit it solid, don't worry about where it goes.
Right.
So those are kind of things that take a little of the responsibility of the result away.
Okay.
You know, stuff like that. I think everybody's wired different, right? I mean, you can tell Tiger to have fun. I don't think the Tiger's going to have fun. I think Fred Couples might have more fun. You know, Lee Trevino certainly had fun. I don't know if Jack did. You know, it's like it has
That's
to be.
That's true. That's a good point.
How are you wired? You
know, is it your personality?
Yeah, it's how's your personality? Yeah. What are you
but
like?
But isn't it supposed to be fun?
I don't know about that. I mean, it's a.
Wow.
It's a game invented probably by drunk Scotsmen herding their sheep across the highlands, whacking rocks with sticks. I mean, and we're trying to make it logical, and, you know, and have fun doing it. I think, yeah, for an amateur, absolutely. You're supposed to have a good time. Remember what your expectations should be, right? If you don't practice, you don't play, you're not a professional.
By the way, listeners, Brady will be stealing that. Every single amateur, have fun. I think it works.
Exactly. I just think, like, that player should just, they should just be enjoying the day, right?
Exactly.
You're outside. But, you know, professional, it's a different world. I mean, this is what you work your life towards, you know? I mean, I never played sports to have fun. I played sports because I love to win. I love to compete.
Fun. Competing is fun.
To me,
it is.
I just probably
see that's the way my brain works.
Definition, you know, like I loved the whole journey of it. I loved the challenge. I wanted to. I wanted to see if I could come through in the clutch. You know, that to me was what it was all about.
But when you got home and you did come through in the clutch, wasn't that fun?
In a way. I would just say, like...
Wow. You're tough.
I would just say it this way. I have a friend of mine I play hockey with still. We have a game tonight. And I would just say that we both have the same mentality towards it. I hate losing way more than I enjoy the winning.
That's not good, though.
I understand that. I get that that's not a...
You're psychotic in many ways.
I don't deny that. But I'm saying, like, not everybody's capable of, like, boxing into your right. I should just be having a good time out here. I think, you know, for some people, this is why they get up in the morning. I mean, it's no fun to go train all day and practice and get up at 5 and all those things. So when you have an opportunity to do something in the game that you've worked your whole life
towards... That's the fun part to me.
It may be. It also may be, like, for them, it's an opportunity to reach their goal, you know, so... But no matter what it is in that circumstance, you can't be crappy to yourself. You can't be. If you're crappy to yourself, you're not going to succeed. You can call it fun, call it whatever you want, but you got to be able to get out of that space fast and get into the process. And the process is, what does a good shot look like right now? What am I trying to hit? You know, where's that going to start? How much is that going to curve? You know, what does that feel like to me? Practice swing feels that way. Walking in my routine, number of looks I got, whatever that is, so that by the time I'm ready to go and I've got one positive thought, like smoke this thing or hit it solid, whatever it is, it's a positive thought, then I can execute under the gun, and then that's where you're at. You know, that's really what it comes down to. And all the practice and all the training and all the work you've done, it's all building on that moment, you know, and how to make it come out in this hard game that we have to initiate action. You know, we can't just return a serve here. We got to serve, you know.
Right.
So from that standpoint, that's what golf's why it's so fun, right? If it's fun, it's because it's all of those things have come into this moment, and now we got to execute, and it makes it great.
Okay. We talked about the PGA Championship. Yep. Let's wind this thing down with, if you could tell any golfer just one thing to always remember besides one, two, through, or
of
have
course.
Fun.
One, two, through, and have fun.
Yeah.
What would you
tell them? And tell them also, never look at Ted Sobel's grip. You told me it's the ugliest grip in the history. Well, this was years ago. I have improved.
You've improved, to a point.
It's
been worse since yours, yes.
That's saying a lot. And he's trying to give me positive swing thoughts.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's worse than you, Ted.
Well, I'm just helping you just, you know, be okay.
Yeah, you're helping
where
me go back to tennis is what you're helping me. What would you tell anybody, just something to remember to say, you know, this will be always a good thought in your mind, whatever your issues are with your swing?
I'd say stick to finish. If I had to give you one thing, whether it's putting, chipping, pitching, sand, irons, or the driver, if you can have a good picture where you're trying to end up, you do a practice swing that gets to that place, even with putting, hold the end of the finish of the putting stroke. Whatever it is, if you can kind of focus on that, it'll help you connect the dots and get there. You need a picture. You know, you need to work towards that. So no technical thoughts. If that's one thing, that would be it. It would be get to the finish.
Because I always asked you, how do I get a high finish? I love the high finish. Mm-hmm. My finish is so low that it's 6 feet under. I mean, it's really embarrassing at times. And you said, don't worry about your finish. Just worry about where you're swinging at and you're aiming at the target. And your body is aiming at the target when you're done. But I don't think I've ever stuck the finish. I've sort of stuck myself in places I shouldn't have stuck myself.
True. I think, though, like, that's part of what the training is, right? Like, you're trying to know where that is and be able to get to that spot. But high finish, low finish, short finish, wrapped around, doesn't matter. That's not really the important. The important thing is to have a destination. You know, Gary Player used to say, he said, you got to park your car in the garage at night.
Okay.
And so his mentality was the same thing. Like, I got to get to the end of my emotion, wherever the heck that is.
Okay.
So it's just a way of kind of organizing yourself that no matter what is going on, no matter what you're doing, if you can get to the finish and have some balance there and be able to stick it for a second, got a pretty good shot at hitting a good shot, you know. I haven't hit a lot of bad shots in my life when I've done that. You know, it's always been my go-to in tournament golf. It's like, no matter how nervous I am or I barely put the ball on the tee, you know.
Right.
But in those circumstances, that's what I stick with. Yeah.
Okay, by the way, have you ever had an opportunity to play in the PGA?
No, I haven't. I haven't tried to play in the
PGA. Wouldn't that be a blast
to
do it
once? It
would
be fun. I just feel like, you know, I'm not a serious competitive golfer anymore.
Right.
That stopped for me.
But even when you were?
When I was, it just wasn't at that point in my life. You know, when I stopped competing full-time, I wasn't a PGA member yet.
Oh, okay.
So those years didn't overlap at all. So by the time
so if they did, you might have?
I might have. You know, I mean,
that would have been a challenge.
It would have been fun. Yeah. It would have been fun. I played with a lot of guys that have won big stuff, you know, and I've beaten those guys. Not nearly as much as they beat me, for sure. But I've had my moments, you know. But yeah, I think that'd be fun. I mean, the fun part for me now is watching my players compete and do that kind of thing. You know, that's really fun. It's much worse though than doing it yourself. You know, you have zero control. It's horrifying. You know, it's even worse when it's your own kid.
Yeah, exactly.
That's terrible. Yeah. So no, I would have probably in another lifetime maybe that would have happened for me, but it didn't. It was fine. You
it's
know,
no
I got to do other stuff. Sure.
Okay. And you probably root for all the guys that are out there now, right?
100%. Yeah. I mean, it's fun watching. It was fun watching guys that you watched play growing up go out and do it. There's a guy on the Champions Tour. He got out there last year. His name's Ken Tanigawa.
Okay.
He's an L.A. guy.
Yeah.
Played for UCLA.
Okay.
He was on the. He played in Asia for a while as a pro. Fabulous player. But he went out and tried to get his tour card for the Champions Tour, which I don't know if you know, it's really hard to do because they don't really not interested in some.
Right.
No
they
name
want yet. Names.
They want names.
Yeah.
Well, he managed to do that, and he won last year at Pebble Beach.
Oh, that's great.
So. That was really cool. Because
were
that's
you
a,
there?
No, I wasn't there, okay. But that's a guy that I played against and played a lot of golf with.
That's outstanding.
And just kind of like that story that you know never happens, right, where the guy didn't make it and he went and got a job and then, you know, he's going to go out and play one more time. Well, he actually had the fairy tale come true.
Yeah, probably a nice check for that day, huh?
Indeed. Indeed. He's actually done quite well this year as well.
That's great. I remember watching him a few times. I totally forgot he was from
he's
L.A.
A great player. Yeah.
That's great. Last thing. Yes. It's in my book.
Yes.
I got a chapter with you and Eddie Marin's in it.
Okay.
Totally separate. I got Eddie and then you.
Yeah, and it should be in that order.
Exactly. Sure. Yeah. But there are three words that you have to tell the people. Do you know which three words I'm talking about?
Swing the handle?
No, that's his words. Your words.
Oh, no.
If I remember correctly, there's three words, and it's the story about you and your teaching.
Oh, no.
Hump the ball.
Yes.
You've got to be able to describe that to the folks out there listening, because it's more than just those words, I hope.
Yes. Well, basically what happens to a lot of people is if you drew a line from, let's say you're looking at the player and you can see the target off in the distance. So you're standing with a camera behind them.
Okay.
And you drew a line vertically to the ground and it touched the back of their tush straight up and down to the ground.
Got it.
Most great players that you find will swing, and when they're at impact, their left cheek is now touching the line that their butt was touching at setup. They've turned their hips, but they're still no closer to the ball.
Got it.
Well, imagine if you did, if you could, if you could toggle between setup and impact with a player who had gotten closer to the ball than they were at address. Well, you can imagine the motion that would look like.
Got
so
it.
This is where this came
There's
from.
There's a little Elvis in there, right?
Indeed. So this is a thing called, we call it early extension, is your lumbar spine, you know, goes up towards the ball. It's kind of like doing a pelvic tilt. And what's interesting is all great players make that motion through impact. They actually do have a pelvic tilt. Their tummy rises. If you look at any good player, their belt buckle will come up as they're striking.
It's the absolute thing you've told me and showed me on video, and I can't even think about doing it.
And it will happen, but it always should happen at the target and not towards the ball.
Okay.
That's the difference. So an amateur does that in the direction of the ball. They never got enough rotation to have that tummy go up towards the target.
It's the way you turn the hip then?
It's the amount and the way.
Okay.
So people usually start in their heels, and when you start in your heels, you don't stay there. You know, wherever you start in golf, you won't be able to stay. So if you start in heels, you're going to go towards your toes. Well, you can only imagine that takes you in the direction you don't want to go. So we got to fix their setup with their weight and stuff, and then teach them how to use their hips. So basically that motion is correct. It's correct to have thrust through your stomach up as you hit the ball. You just don't want to do it at the ball. You want to do it as you're striking the ball with your tummy going up towards the target. And that's a big, it's a huge thing for speed. We teach all the kids to do it. You'd see the original Silver Scott, Tommy Armour. If you look at him in black and white film, he does it. Hmm. And it's gone through all the decades of golf, and it still continues to this day. And Rory does it better than anybody.
Really?
And Justin Thomas is great at it. And this is nothing new. Okay. There are no new things.
No, but what is new is thrust and extension and humping the ball. I'm not even thinking golf, but you somehow were able to do that.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, that's one of the great things about studying, knowing your history. You know, if you watch players from the past, you see all the commonalities, and it makes it really fun to be able to kind of, how does that translate to somebody today, and how can I help them be great at this?
See, it's back to my two words, have fun.
And your three words, one, two, and through.
And goodbye.
Exactly.
We're done. Brady Riggs, nice talking to you. It was a blast.
Talking to you, Ted. Thanks. Indeed.
Hope you enjoyed our podcast here on Touching Greatness. Coming up, the PGA Championship from Bethpage Black. That's going to be fantastic this weekend. Enjoy your golf weekend, everybody. I am still Ted Sobel, and thanks for joining us.
Hi, it's Darren Clark, and you're listening to Touching Greatness.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.